I'm Michelle. Welcome to The Umbilical Cord of the Gourd, where I listen to my best friend Maggie tell some crazy stories. Hey, Maggie, what's up?
Hey, Michelle. When we started this, I thought I should start with the intro to 1-2 Step by Sierra.
How does that go?
This is a Jazzy Fizzle production.
Maggie, what's the story today?
It has nothing to do with Sierra or 1-2 stepping. Okay, we're going to talk about all the jobs I've worked in my life because it's a weird amount.
What is the first job that you can remember?
The first job I had was a technical assistant for the physics department, which I was trash at.
What kind of stuff did you have to do? Because I did that also.
Yeah, so I think the main thing that stuck with me from that job was not what I had to do, and it was more of the fact that, like, the time that they told me I had to work and the time that I had available between school and volleyball was incompatible. So, like, after volleyball practice every day, I would go to the cafeteria. I would run to the cafeteria. I would get a sandwich. I would put on a really thick sweatshirt so no one could smell me. And I literally only wore it for this purpose. I can't think of a day I wore the sweatshirt into the world except for to cover up my volleyball smell and set up physics lab.
Also, did you have Colina? Because I had Colina, and I think I remember him yelling at another Asian person.
So, like, a few things. One, he's dead, and, like, we probably shouldn't speak ill of the dead, but maybe he deserved it. But the thing I remember you telling me is that you had it with Jose, who's Mexican. And at one point, Jose picked up a stapler and was like, I'm going to take this to the other room and use it. And Kalina was like, no, don't steal that. I know about you people.
Wait, I don't even remember this.
Yeah, so he was like, I know about you people, and you and Jose both thought he was talking about Mexicans, but he was just talking about students. Well, he missed how racist that was.
Oh, no. What do you think was the most pointless job you've ever had?
Yeah, no question. So the first time I lived in Germany, I interned with this company called De Kong, which no longer exists because it was the dumbest company the business plan was just so bad. And the premise was to, like, it was a company that helped Chinese people come to Germany for healthcare, except for the like guy who founded the company didn't speak Chinese. So he kept hiring unpaid interns to do all of the Chinese translation for him, which to hire Chinese translators, that should be expensive. And I just spent the entire time, like, looking up search engine optimization for Chinese search engines. And then I left. And then, 6 months later, his company went underwater. So.
But there might still be a chance that some of your Chinese translations exist out in the world.
I hope not. Like, I don't think the world needs that bad of translations. They were bad. I did not do a good job. Also, he sucked. He was bad at business and he sucked as a person.
What kind of stuff did he do?
All right. A very subtle cultural difference between Americans and Germans is how we blow our noses.
Okay. Can you describe those?
Yeah. And then also, like, a third, like, so bring in Chinese, German, and American. All three of us have very different nose blowing cultures. And no one in any language class, in any culture class, in history class, no one ever teaches you about how to blow your nose in different countries. But that is why Maggie Armstrong is here today to teach everyone what the deal is. So in the US, you don't want to, like, make a trumpet with your nose. So you do a lot of, like, until you can get to the bathroom and, like, really blow it out, you know?
Okay.
Like, you do a lot of sniffling.
Yeah.
In Germany, that is unacceptable. People find it really repulsive when you, like, sniffle, when you just, like.
Right.
And so they instead would really prefer you to bring out a tissue, blow your nose as loud as you can. I don't know if I can. Hold on. Let me move my wine so I don't accidentally snot into my wine.
I don't need you to blow your nose.
Yeah, I don't have a tissue anyways. I have no boogers, and I also have no tissues.
So it all works out.
Yeah. The perfect arrangement. So like in Germany, like you're allowed to like make the loudest nose blowing you can as long as you never sniffle. In China, you can sort of like plug one of your nose holes and then just snot.
Like onto the ground. Yeah, that's what my dad does.
Yeah. Somebody, I was once talking to like another American who spent some time in China, and he was like, I think the like Chinese national anthem should just be people being like, but also what's really gross in Germany, so like in the US, like we sniffle and then I go to the bathroom on my own time and I blow it and then I throw it away. In Germany, they'll like blow their nose and instead of finding a trash can, they'll fold it up and then they'll put it in their pocket.
Oh.
So they're just carrying around a pocket full of boogers.
Anyway, Maggie, what is the most interesting job story you can think of?
Okay, so my favorite job story is also from the point in my life that I think best showcases the weirdest fuck jobs I've had in my life. So I had a 6-month period in which I was living with my mom. My mom and dad were married, but just living in different houses for job purposes. I was living with my mom and just working like very, very strange jobs. And in this time period, I was thing number one, an administrative assistant at a church. Thing number two, a high school volleyball coach. Thing number three, a substitute assistant preschool teacher. Thing number four, a cast member at the Disney store.
And how many of these jobs do you have on your resume?
Actually, one of them I do. I still have the administrative assistant job because there was a finance aspect to it. And like it's the only thing on my resume that shows that I know how to work with like budgets and with finance stuff. So that one, I got one.
Tell me about that lady that you worked with.
Oh, Sis Mills. I love Sis. I wonder if she's alive. I hope she's alive. Okay, so Sis was 86, something like this. Maybe 5'2 on a good day. She woke up at 5 o'clock every morning to go for a swim. And then she had been a nurse her whole life. Ah, Sis was incredible. She had been a nurse her whole life and had... So, like, there are layers of racism and everything in the South, but I will say that she worked as a nurse in the Black unit of the hospital, and really, like, that was her mission, was, like, making sure that Black people had healthcare, which I think is pretty cool. And then when she retired, she was too active to retire, so she decided that she would be the nurse practitioner for the church, and she just set up an office for herself. So I would wake up at 8 and I would go to the church and I would hang out with Sis for 4 or 5 hours, and I would do some of their finances, which I was really ill-equipped to do because I don't know anything about finances. I would help organize. There's this closet full of random shit that I spent 2 weeks organizing. That was fun. There was one day where like I'd gotten pretty drunk the night before. And I came into work still kind of drunk. And when I got there, Sis had a mannequin for CPR. And Sis and I decided this was my boyfriend. And we did a photo shoot with me just like cuddling up with the CPR dummy. So this time I would wake up at 8, go to work, hang out with Sis. Sometimes I was drunk. Sometimes I would live out fantasies of being married to a CPR dummy. And then I would go home at 1 o'clock, take a nap for 2 hours. And then I would go to be a volleyball coach. And the reason I was a volleyball coach is my brother had recently been hired as a history teacher at a high school that should remain unnamed because I think I'm going to besmirch them in this interview. And they basically told him, we will hire you Because I guess we kind of need a history teacher, but we really need a volleyball coach. And you reffed IM games in college, so we think you can probably be a volleyball coach. Turns out different things. He didn't know how the game worked at all. So so he called me when I was still living in Germany and said, hey, can you teach me how volleyball works? And then I got home and I decided to stay with my mom for 6 months. And I then realized I also had the free time to be a volleyball coach. To be clear, I did the math once and I think I made about $3 an hour. Maybe. So Matt made somehow twice as much as I did.
What?
Which is bullshit because he didn't know how volleyball worked. So he was the varsity coach and I was a JV coach, which meant that I was the sole JV coach. No one else was there for JV practice. And then I would also go to varsity and run practices, but he would hold a clipboard. So somehow in this 3 month period, he made $2,000 and I made $1,000, even though I did everything. I did everything. And it's the only reason he has a job to this day. It's fine. Fine, not bitter about it. So my brother was the varsity coach, I'm the JV coach, which meant that I got to school at 3 p.m. and I started JV practice that went for an hour and a half, and then varsity practice started, also went for an hour and a half. And there was one week that just was a work of art. And we had a game. And there was this really nice girl, and Alyssa plays really bad, and we have like a huddle, like a little like circle afterwards. And I like released everyone to go do whatever, and I said, Alyssa, come talk to me. And I was like, buddy, what's going on? Why were you so bad today? And she kind of started crying and was like, this one girl, I don't want to say names because I don't want to like start anything. This one girl was just really mean and just kept saying things about how like I shouldn't have been chosen to be on the team and to play this position. And also she said this and I knew exactly what girl she was talking about.
High school girls are middle school girls are probably meaner.
Yeah. But I also like as an adult, I don't like to shit talk kids because like,
yeah.
But this girl sucked. Her name was Emma and I feel no need to preserve her
integrity, modesty.
Also, like 1,000 girls are named Emma.
Yeah. Oh, more than 1,000.
Yes. 100 million people are named Emma. Okay. So I was like, okay, Alyssa, you gotta figure out how to like not let other people's bullshit get to you and just know that you were put on the team for a reason and like you're here and you're on it. So chill out and I'll work on talking to Emma. And make her be nice. Anyways, go to practice the next day. And I only see these girls in the afternoon because in the morning time, again, I'm hanging out with my 82-year-old best friend, Sis Mills.
And your boyfriend.
And my mannequin boyfriend, who never got a name, but he should have.
What would you name him?
He has to be an Eric because there's something about a very hairless man that has to be named Eric. And CPR dummies never have a lot of hair.
Can you imagine having a hairy CPR dummy?
Actually, a real problem is that CPR dummies never have boobs.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so, like, people are only taught how to do CPR in a man's chest. And when someone has boobs, they, like, don't know where to put their hands, which
wow,
is bad.
Wow, I never thought of that.
Then women die.
Yeah.
So like
what the
yeah, like that's really fucked up, right?
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like our healthcare system only cares about men. Okay.
Only our 25th tangent for the day.
That one was at least a concise tangent.
Yeah.
And an important tangent. The world needs to understand. Yes. Okay. So they have this whole day at school, and then I meet them afterwards for volleyball practice. We start practice, and it's fine. And then we're playing this game where, like, they're all on the court on one side, and I'm serving it to them from the other side. So I can't hear anything any of them are saying. And I just keep seeing people, like, snap their head towards another girl say something clearly catty, like, and then snap their head in the other direction. And I don't know what's happening, but I know it's bad. And at one point, I remember being like, okay, can we, I knew this was out of control. And I also hate managing other people's emotions. And I was like, okay, well, can we all just close our eyes and breathe? And then all of these high school girls were like, this is so dumb. And I was like, I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me because I can't deal with your bullshit. But one of the problems is Emma, the girl who had been mean to Alyssa the day before, was being really mean to this girl, Taylor. And the thing you need to know about Taylor is I think Taylor was like 6 feet tall. So she could like hit and block things really well, except for that she was also very bad at volleyball. So like very uncoordinated, but sometimes just by the nature of her height, she would do things good. Yeah. We would get points because she was so tall, except for like she didn't, there was no skill there. So she did something dumb and bad, and I don't remember what she did at all, but I just remember Emma audibly from across this giant gym was like, ugh, Taylor. And that's not the way you talk to a teammate, because yelling at, or like grunting at people never makes them better. And she had done this a few times, and finally I was like, in a kind of stern voice, I said, Emma, can we please speak nicely to our teammates and like not be disrespectful of them? And then we go back to practicing, and then this catty thing of like whips head, looks in the other direction, happens again, and this girl Marina gets really upset and just like storms off of the court. And I was like, all right, I guess someone take her spot. We keep playing. Marina comes out for a minute. And then Emma says something else. I don't know what it is. And all of a sudden, Marina like bolts to where her backpack is, puts her backpack on, and starts like not quite running, but like power walking out of the gym. And luckily, it was about to be varsity practice, so some of the senior girls had showed up. And I looked at one girl, Mary, and I said, "Mary, please take over practice." And I chased Marina, this 14-year-old girl, out of the gym. And Marina's just huffing and walking. And I said, Marina, what is going on? And she wasn't looking at me, and she was just like power walking for the door. And I was like, Marina, if you're going to leave practice, you have to tell me where you are going. And Marina turns around, points a finger towards the gym door, and said, that girl is a damned hoe. And I think at this point I figured out that she was also talking about Emma, the really mean girl. And so instead of reacting, I just said, oh, you can go home now. So I go back into practice. It lasts for like 10 more minutes. All the girls leave. Varsity practice starts. And at this point, it's me and my brother. My brother's holding a clipboard, sort of nodding as I'm telling everybody what to do for practice. And about 10 minutes into practice, this very, very, very short woman walks in and is like, are you Maggie? And I said, yeah. And she was like, can I talk to you outside? And I was like, yeah, Matt, can you keep running this? This lady wants to talk to me. And I go outside, and it's Emma's mom, the mean girl's mom. And she starts on a 40-minute rant in which I say maybe 6 words. And in this rant, she's talking. She basically is like, how dare you yell at my daughter? Again, I didn't yell.
Now I understand why she's such a bitch.
Yeah, exactly, because her mom sucks. I didn't yell. I was basically like, can we be nice to our friends? Thank you. That's the gist of what I said. And her mom is yelling at me and like, well, how dare you yell at my daughter? And also trying to pull, like, I'm really well connected and I can get you fired cards, I want to remind you, I was getting paid $3 an hour, so I could have found better things to do with my time. And she kept threatening to find the principal of the school. At one point, she also got really condescending and was like, I don't know if you've ever managed anything in your life. And I was like, you are clearly a soccer mom who has nothing better to do than yell at your daughter's JV volleyball coach. So maybe you can fuck off. She's really a Karen. Good Lord. Also, she had, you know, this like white lady hairstyle where like they have the highlights that are really easy to tell that like this is blonde and this is brown. She had this hair. She also, though, got really racist.
About what?
So she was mad that I was yelling at her daughter. And the important thing to know about the school is it was... So the school district where my brother teaches has a higher per capita murder rate than Detroit. But they also have a lot of kids who drive Lexuses. So it's like a really socioeconomically stratified school. And we had a lot of black girls on the volleyball team. And her mom basically said, how dare you yell at my daughter when you have all these hoodlums on the team? Because when we travel to other schools, I'm embarrassed to be associated with Vegetable High School. Subtext being, there are black people on this team that you are yelling at. How dare you yell at my pristine white daughter who's never done anything wrong in her life when actually her daughter was a fucking bitch.
Wow, I hate her.
I hate her so much. Oh, I was so... But yeah. Also, like, but then she was like, you made my daughter cry. And, like, I don't want to make a 16-year-old cry. So, I was like, I will talk to your daughter and apologize to your daughter. Like, I want to, like, build my relationship up with your daughter so that, like, she does not feel like I am here to make her life worse. And I came back into varsity practice. I've been gone for 45 minutes. And I want to remind you, my brother does not do jack shit about volleyball. So, he when I walk back in, he's like, Maggie, please save me. I've just been telling them to do random things for 45 minutes. So I start practice and I was like, Matt, you have no idea what's been happening the past 2 hours. I was so mad. Like, I was so, like, visibly mad from my brother about this woman being super mean and super racist that he drove 45 minutes out of his way to go home so he could go to where I was staying and have one drink with me because I really needed someone to yell at while I drank some whiskey.
Whoa. Do you hear Derek swearing?
I'm very nervous right now.
I hear him... I heard a noise. I thought it might have been your dog throwing up.
He gets very into his video games.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Let's move on to some more job shit.
Jobby jabs.
What is the most difficult job you've ever had?
Being a camp counselor, but it was also the most fun job I've ever had.
Wait, isn't the camp counselor thing where you also did a bunch of dares?
Yes. All right, so there are two games you need to know about. The first game is called What Are the Odds? And the way it works is I come up with a crazy thing to do. And I say, Michelle, what are the odds that you do this crazy thing? So, for instance, like, what are the odds? Say there's this person sleeping in the grass somewhere, just taking a nice summer nap. Okay, this seemed like a normal thing to say because of college, but okay, yeah, let's come up with a better scenario.
In the
scenario.
Real world, there's not a lot of people sleeping in the grass.
Yeah, let's come up with a better scenario. Hold on, give me a minute. All right, say there's somebody who's like in line at a cafeteria style restaurant, and you can see their underwear coming out of their pants. And I say, Michelle, what are the odds that you give them a wedgie? And you get to pick a number, 1, 2, infinity. So you say 1 in 10, 1 in 5, 1 in 20, 1 in 1,000.
Okay.
And then somebody counts down from 3. And on the 4th beat, you and I both say a number between 1 and whatever you said. So if you said 1 in 10, we both say a number between 1 and 10.
Okay.
And if we say the same number, you have to do that thing.
Okay.
If we say a different number, you don't.
Okay.
So if I said, what are the odds you give that man a wedgie? And you say 1 in 10. 3, 2, 1, 4.
8.
Okay. Oh, it was a bit off.
You get the point. I don't have to give him. Okay, but what's to really hold someone from, like, actually giving the wedgie? You know, like, where's the enforcement?
It's the trust, right? So we're playing this game together and you're at camp. So like you have a group of 10 to 20 people that you spend all of your time with.
And these are all, like, not just your co-counselors, but these are also the campers.
Yeah, it's both. But the thing is, the way that camp works is campers think as like if you're good at being a camp counselor, campers think you're the coolest fucking person they've ever met.
Okay.
And so, like, if I play this game and you play this game and we're both camp counselors and we're both, and like the campers like us, they will do whatever they have to do if they lose this game.
True.
So, like, we had a camper kiss a pig on the mouth.
You had pigs?
A neighbor had pigs. It was, like, through a fence. They had to, like, coax the pig over and then kiss the pig. So that was one game, is the what are the odds? And, yeah, it's mostly peer pressure, which yeah. you should avoid peer pressure. But if you have to give into it, do it for dares, not for drugs. And then the other version was an even more peer pressure-induced version of dares, where me and some of the counselors one day were, like, again, we were sleeping in grass, and my friend was like, let's play true.
I'm noticing a common theme of you and grass.
I love taking outdoor naps. So my friend was like, let's play truth or dare. And I was like, all right, cool. And we did truth. Somebody said truth or dare, and someone picked truth. And then all of us looked at them, and we agreed in this moment that truth is for pussies, and we have no patience for this.
Oh, except we talked about pussies are strong and balls are...
You're right. Okay. So we said truth is for losers. No. Truth is for...
balls.
Cowards. That's the answer. We said truth is for cowards, and we don't play this way. So then we thought we have to eliminate truth as an option. And instead of truth or dare, we started a game that we called Dare or Die.
What? What's die?
It means that you're dead to us. What we actually said at the time was it means, like, either you do this dare or we will kill you. But it was church camp, okay. So we didn't murder anyone because we're good Christian kids. So we invented this game, Dare or Die. And the way it worked, it started with a group of four of us. And we would initiate new people in. And you say to someone, dare or die. And you give them a dare.
Wait, this is different than the number thing?
Yes. Because the number thing, there's an odds thing, right? Okay. And the cool thing about the what are the odds is that you play it constantly. And at some point you get overly confident because there's a 10%. If you say 1 in 10, that's the standard.
Yeah.
There's a 10% chance you have to do the thing.
But I don't think that's true because I think that there is a certain probability that people say certain numbers.
Yeah. So there's like a psychological, it's like rock, paper, scissors, but a little more complicated. There's like a psychological aspect.
But what's the, what holds people back from just saying like a million every time?
Peer pressure. The answer to every dare game, Michelle, is peer pressure. Like, why do you do it? Why don't you just say a million? Peer pressure.
Yeah, but I think I would just say a million every time.
Well, then I would stop giving you dares.
Yeah, which is what I want.
Fine, then you're not playing. I just play with other people. So that's the thing. That's the thing about dare games is, like, especially dare games are perfect for camp because you're around the same people 24/7. We're always together because if I only see you once a week or once a month, then this game isn't great because then there's
no chance of being a social outcast.
Yeah. Can I tell you now my favorite dare that ever happened?
Yes.
Okay. So this is part of Dare or Die, and Dare or Die basically takes the odds out of what are the odds and just says you have to do this, and it gets passed around from person to person. So, like, if I said to you, Michelle, dare or die, lick the floor right now, and you licked the floor, you have the dare, and you can now say to Derek, dare or die, eat trash. And if Derek eats trash, then he has it, and he can say Maggie or Michelle. Like, you can pass it to whoever's established.
But there's only one person that has it at any one point in time.
Yeah, okay. And the way you get it is you do a dare that was given to you.
Yeah. Okay, that seems fair. Okay.
It seems fair, and it also escalates, but it can only, there's a ceiling, because you know the only way the game can keep going is that you give someone a dare that they'll actually do.
Right.
So, like, the dare is never going to be, like, Michelle, like, pee on a cop car while a cop is sitting in the front seat. Because then you'll get arrested. And then the game is over. So, I'm at camp. We're playing this game. And there's this guy, Ricky. Ricky is in his 30s, maybe, like, 32. And he is like a construction guy who works at camp, but Ricky's like very cool.
The only things that you've told me about this camp are that you repair people's houses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Are these kids just being sent to toil, or are they doing other like normal camp stuff?
So they would come in, they would come with their church. They wouldn't come alone. And they would come in on Sunday, and then Monday through halfway through Thursday, they would like help repair shit. So like paint some toil. Yes. They would come to toil Monday through Thursday, and they would toil Monday through Wednesday. They would toil like 9 to 5-ish, 9 to 3. And then they would get off of toiling. They would have like 2 or 3 hours of just like play volleyball or like go swimming or do dumb dares. And then we would have worship, which was like an hour. And then we would have dinner, and then they would have a couple hours of free time. And then they would go to bed. Okay, so let me tell this story. I'm going to start where I think I left off. So there's this guy, Ricky, and he's a construction guy, and he's like in his 30s. All of the counselors are in their early 20s, and all of the kids are high schoolers, maybe middle schoolers. And we're lying in the grass, making up dares, and we say, "Hey, Ricky, see those two campers?" And we have these two campers, and they were really hot 17-year-olds.
Wait, are these the twins?
They were twins, yes. And they were both very buff, and they both wore really tight shirts all the time. They also both carried guitars around all the time. What? To do that, like, I'm a hot guy who, like, plays guitar because I'm sensitive.
I'm sensitive.
But also fun. And, like, we can do fun guitar songs together. And they all, the other thing they shared, so they both had really pointy nipples. Like, really pointy. And they, again, they wore really tight shirts because they were buff and they wanted people to know how buff they were. So we said, "Hey, Ricky, come here." So Ricky came over. And we said, "All right, dare or die?" He said, "Dare?" And we said, "All right, pick a twin. And then we want you to pinch them on the nipples." And Ricky said, "No, I'll never do that. No way. I'm never going to pinch twin boys on the nipples. Or one of twin boys on the nipples. Nuh-uh." So every night we have worship. Worship is about an hour long. And the second half of it is really serious. But the first half is like, tell your favorite story from the day. And like, here's a fun game where people might fall down. This makes the camp sound worse than it was. And we got to the story time part. And one of the twins went up to tell a story. And there's about 150 people at camp this week. And Ricky's standing in the back of the room. And all of a sudden, Ricky takes off running to the front. And he gets in line to tell a story. Ricky didn't normally tell stories. So we were like, something's up. Like, what is he doing? And he stands next to one of the twins who is also telling a story. And as someone else is telling the story, Ricky, without turning his body, just sort of pushes his arms to the sides, grabs both of one of the twins' nipples, squeezes, and then just like casually comes back to standing totally still. What the twin whose nipples he squeezed didn't like flinch, just very slowly raised his arms, covered his nipples, looked very uncomfortably around. Noticed no one had noticed this.
Wait, how?
I don't know. Also, like, there, this is the kind of camp where chaperones come. So, like, there are adults who are watching this, and none of the adults noticed.
And it's a church-based camp, right?
Yes. It was super weird. That's the end of that story. That's how Ricky got involved with dare culture.
Are you an adventurous person?
Yeah.
Do you like a challenge?
Yeah.
Will you do anything to throw your coworkers under the bus for a promotion?
I'll throw them under a fucking train.
Then we have the perfect job for you. Apply now to Dare or Die Industries, now hiring for all positions. Let's hear from Janet, who just accepted a job with us.
The first day when I worked there, they asked me to lick 13 feet. And I said, oh, okay. But the thing is, I have one day of free sick leave a year. Couldn't be happier.
So be like Janet. Apply now. Who was the weirdest coworker you've had?
Okay, I have a really good answer for this. In the 6 month period where I was working very weird jobs, so volleyball coach, church administrator, whatever, I also worked as a seasonal employee at the Disney store. And the most important thing here is that I am really poorly equipped to be a seasonal employee at the Disney store because you have to do a lot of, "Hi, we're so glad you're here today. Welcome to the kingdom. Come on in." "Oh, yeah. We're just going to talk like this the whole time and just be so excited that you're here." And that is not who I am as a person.
And not swear.
Never swear. So when I went to interview for this job, it was a group interview kind of thing. And there was this guy, Ronnie. And I, again, this was a seasonal job. I was just doing it because I needed something to supplement my hanging out with 84-year-old women hobby. We have this interview, and it was in a mall. The store was in a mall. And so we went to the store. We met the manager. And then we walked to the food court, and we sat down. And it was me, Ronnie, and the manager. And they basically, like, half of the interview was, "How much do you love the Disney Corporation?" And I was able to give, like, pretty mediocre answers about, like, "I love Hercules." Also, they asked what our favorite, like, character was, and I came up with Meg from Hercules, and they were like, "Why?" And what I wanted to say is, like, Disney doesn't have a lot of whores around, and it was nice to have some, like, hoe representation, but I didn't. I spun it in a different direction.
What did you say? What did you-
I don't remember. I think I said something along the lines of, like, I liked Meg because she was a good person who had, like, a complicated history or something like this. But what I meant to say was, like, she was a hoe, and, like, Disney finally embraced hoedom and then forgot about it forever. Anyways, so, like, we're walking back to the store from the food court. And I'm talking to Ronnie, and he was like, "Yeah, the thing is, like, I'm working here at this store in the mall because my dream is to be the president of the parks division of Disney."
Whoa.
"So I work in a pool company that helps people, like, build pools in their backyard. And in my free time, I've been writing a Disney musical because Disney doesn't have any representation of Canada. And I've been writing a Disney musical about Canada. And I can't wait. Like, I'm starting here, but I'm really going to show them, like, what I have planned for the company." And I was like, "Yeah."
They represented hoes before Canada.
They represented hoes before Canada. And I think that somebody needs this tattoo. Just hoes before Canada. So, anyways, I come home from this interview. And my mom was like, "How'd it go?" And I said, "I mean, like, if they're going to hire one person, they're going to hire the person who spent his entire life trying to be a parks director for Disney." And I'm thinking, like, man... This guy loves Disney, and, like, I just kind of want a job and free tickets to Disney World. So we both get hired, and he starts his training a few days before I do. And I'm sitting in, like, the back room doing my online training. Also, the online training was not, like, some of it was things like how to know if there might be a bomb in a backpack. But a lot of it was like, okay, so if someone asks you for something, you can't say, "Oh, it's on the right side in the back." You have to say, like, "Oh, it's back in the Magic Kingdom. Everything has to tie back into a story about Ariel."
So, but like, if you say that's in the Magic Kingdom, they can't find that.
Yeah. So that was a bad example.
Okay.
Again, I was not good at this job. So in the middle of every Disney store, there's a bunch of TVs, and they have a half hour loop of different musical numbers.
Like from movies?
From Disney movies. And okay. Some of them are from like the big movies. Some of them are from movies that are coming out. Some of them are from old movies. And some of them are from like Disney Channel movies. And some of them are from like Playhouse Disney. There's a couple of songs of puppies singing that will never leave my mind.
Can you sing like a little bit?
So I said that. And then as I said, they will never leave my mind. I realized that I forgot them. And I was really happy about that. And Ronnie comes back kind of sweaty. And he was like, ah, yeah, I was out there and the song from The Descendants 2 came out. I, like one of these little kids was like, I'm sure you don't know this song. And he said, I do. And then I burst out into the dance move because I memorized all of the dance moves.
Oh my God.
This guy's like 37.
And this was like after like our time?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry. This movie had come out in the past couple of years.
Oh.
Yeah. So this is not something that it would have been normal. Like he.
Right. It wasn't from his childhood.
Yeah. So then he was like, yeah. And I've been like studying. Every night I go home and I watch either something from Disney Channel or from Playhouse Disney or like a Disney movie that I haven't seen.
Okay. That like is very disturbing for me to picture a 30-year-old man watching Playhouse Disney to learn certain dance moves.
Uh-huh. I agree. All right. So then I start working there. And after some amount of time, I don't see Ronnie anymore, which is weird because he wanted to be the president of the company.
Maybe he succeeded and he got promoted really fast.
He did not. Here's what happened. So he's at work one day and the police come in and they say, is Ronnie vegetable name here? And my boss was like, yeah, give us a minute. We'll get him. And came out. And apparently Ronnie was wanted in a couple of different states because he stole a lot of money from the Dollar Tree.
What?
Also, a thing I just remembered that I never told you about Ronnie is he fostered children.
Oh, I don't like this.
Yeah, I don't really know what happened.
Is there more to the story?
No, that's the whole story. That's my weirdest coworker. So, like, the thing I'm going to say is that, like, when I worked at the Disney store, I did not want to work there forever. And I was somehow deeply offended when they did not offer me a long-term job. And all of the stories I've told you tonight have been stories where, like, I don't want to work there.
Yeah.
I have much better things to be doing with my time. But when you work at a place, you get really wrapped up in that bullshit.
Isn't that weird? Is that like people define so much of their life based on work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The random word is bruschetta.
So one time, Michelle and I went to a party. And we got there a while late, and they asked that everyone bring some sort of drink or appetizer or something. One of these parties where, like, we want to keep people well fed. And the party was, like, an hour and a half, 2 hours away from where we were living. We thought, oh, that's cool. And we went there. We got there after everyone had eaten, because we're good at timing. And we still, though, had a Tupperware full of bruschetta. So full of, like,
Tomatoes,
balsamic, like, whatever.
Like, the topping for the bruschetta, and then we separately brought, like, a French baguette.
At some point, people start getting drunk, and we would never be among the people that get drunk. Because, like,
we're Puritans. And nobody ate our bruschetta.
Yeah, it might have been because we got there an hour and a half after eating ended. But, like, no one ate it. That was very rude of them. Assholes. And then we get really drunk. And I think this might be the drunkest we've ever been together.
No, no, no. I don't think so.
It's up there.
But anyway, this apartment of my friend's had, like, four different, like, rooms with their own bathrooms.
We are on the bathroom floor crying. And the reason that we're crying is that we are both sad about how much we love each other.
And I remember one of the really pointed memories I have is that I'm sitting on the floor and I'm like, Michelle, it makes me really sad sometimes. They're like, I'm never gonna love anyone as much as I love you because, like, you're my favorite person. And then Michelle had a bucket full of bruschetta and then just gave me a spoonful of tomatoes.
Because I think also you were crying about, like, negative things. And then I was like, okay, every time you say a positive thing, I'm going to give you bruschetta to reward you.
Yeah. So I think I needed therapy. And Michelle just fed me instead, which is also fine.
It's a form of therapy.
I actually described this to a friend recently, and she was like, that's very arrogant of you. And I explained that sometimes we get so drunk and we cry that other people don't have friendships as meaningful as our friendship.
Whoa.
Which, that's what we're crying about. Yeah. Don't lie to yourself.
No, but no, I don't think it's that as much as, like, because we've met very randomly. You know what I mean? Like, there's a very small chance that we would have become friends. And so for me personally, that's what I cry about, is that on the off chance that we had not clapped erasers together, we would not have had this bruschetta experience.
Yeah. Anyways, the next morning we woke up in a different room with a very different bathroom. I remember the exact bathroom that I was sitting in when we had this conversation and you were feeding me spoonfuls of bruschetta. The next day we woke up in a different room and someone walked into the bathroom and said, why is there salsa in the bathtub?
So somehow we had moved the bruschetta.
The nice thing about this job is that I managed to get a free trip to I managed